from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, Governor Gavin Newsom is proposing a 3-year suspension of mandatory school fitness exams, while the state studies whether it should modify the test or scrap it altogether. Newsom is responding to concerns that the tests can subject kids to bullying, body shaming, and gender identity discrimination. We look at the pros and cons of the state fitness test after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Do you remember taking the school fitness test? For some students, running a timed mile in front of their peers was humiliating. For me, it was the pull-up test that I dreaded. But California's requirement that all 5th, 7th, and 9th graders take a fitness test could be suspended next year, out of concern the test is discriminatory for gender nonconforming kids or leads to bullying and body shaming. In this hour of Forum, we take a deeper look at the effectiveness and the impact of the state's fitness test, and we want to hear from you. What are your memories of taking the mandatory test? Do you think we should be doing fitness testing in schools? We'll be joined this hour by Dr. Nirav Pandya. He is the Director of Pediatric Sports Medicine and Chief of Pediatric Orthopedic Surgery at UCSF. Good morning, Nirav Pandya.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Also with us is Lindsay Brewitt. She's a psychologist at UCSF. She works with children and young adults with eating disorders. Dr. Brewitt, thanks for joining us as well.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
Also, we're going to start by talking with Linda Darling-Hammond. She's president of the California State Board of Education. Good morning, Linda Darling-Hammond.
Good morning.
So thanks for joining us. Can you start by telling us more about what's behind the proposal to suspend the test for 3 years? What drove this?
Well, the California Department of Education has been getting complaints for years about various aspects of the test, particularly the body mass index, which, has led to concerns about provocations for eating disorders. In fact, the National Eating Disorders Association in 2013 published a comment about how the FitnessGram score reports may trigger behaviors such as, skipping meals and anorexia and bulimia, because the passing scores are unrealistic for a lot of kids who are perfectly physically fit, but don't fit into that little box. There are also problems with students who are non-binary, gender identifying, in terms of how the test requires them to identify their scores. So there have been a lot of issues around it. And the main concern is that we want to promote health and physical fitness and not inadvertently create health disorders.
And when you say you've been getting complaints, you mean organizations, but also from parents as well?
Parents, yes. All kinds of parents and teachers have been asking for it to be suspended for years. Back in the Schwarzenegger administration, Governor Schwarzenegger even pointed out that the BMI screening would have identified him in his bodybuilding days as obese and expressed problems with the test at that time.
So then what are you going to do, or what's the state going to do over the 3-year suspension to determine whether the test needs to go or needs to be changed?
Well, this is a state that values physical fitness. We want kids to be obviously continuing to engage in physical activity. We will be looking at other assessments that may be used that are more appropriate. We'll also be looking at ways to embed in the physical fitness classes the kinds of both nutritional and activity-oriented guidance that will be healthy for them. So we're not abandoning our concern about physical fitness, but we are going to be looking for another mode to assess it.
Right. So this doesn't have implications for whether or not physical education is going to remain in schools, or that requirement will remain.
Exactly.
And if I'm right, so, and I'm remembering this correctly, though it's been modified since I actually did it, there's this timed running assessment, there's There are pull-ups, there are push-ups, there are sit-and-reach exercises, as well as what you mentioned in terms of measuring your BMI. But can you remind us why this type of test was put in place in the first place?
Well, I go back even further, perhaps, than you do, to the days when John Kennedy, as president, put in place a physical fitness test that, you know, was used in a lot of schools to encourage kids to, you know, become physically fit. And California followed that path many years ago to encourage physical fitness. I don't think at that time the concerns about how it might actually encourage bullying, body shaming, and other problems for kids was really thought about in the same way as it is today.
So I'm curious what you do or what the state does with the results of the physical fitness assessment. I mean, I guess that school districts are reporting these results to you. What happens after that?
The state doesn't actually do anything with the results. They're not part of any accountability system or any statewide reporting system. They're intended to be, you know, locally attended to. But local districts also use them in different ways. The state has been encouraging districts not to use these scores as a basis for determining whether a student passes the physical education class or whether they graduate. But we do get reports of the scores being used in ways that make them very high stakes for students. And that just adds to the concerns.
What do you mean by that, very high stakes for students?
Well, in some places we've had reports that schools use them to determine whether a student will pass the course. And if you don't pass your physical education courses in high school, you can't graduate. So there have been reports of young, you know, developing women who, you know, become bulimic or anorexic because they think they can't pass the course and graduate if they don't fit the body mass index, for example. Now, that is not the intended use of the test, but we've even had a report of suicidal intentions from kids who become so discouraged.
Well, at a time when community leaders and parents are also worrying about whether or not there are enough opportunities for physical activity in schools, are you concerned that getting rid of the fitness test could send a message about the priority of physical activity, physical health?
I don't think so. Physical fitness is a required course. It is, you know, well ensconced in schools. Many of the people who have sent criticisms of the test are physical education instructors who find that it undoes a lot of what they're trying to do in their courses around helping people become healthy, fit, accepting, you know, their particular body design and, you know, developing lifelong habits of physical fitness. So I'm not worried that we will see less physical activity or education. I think we will see a healthier brand of that in many grade levels.
And so what will it take for a decision, a final decision to be made about whether or not to suspend it for 3 years and to go through this process? Because I understand it was sort of something that was added to the budget proposal, kind of a trailer bill.
Yes. Well, the things that are in the trailer bill have to go through the legislature, and the final budget and all of the legislation is adopted between July and September. You know, the governor signs bills in usually September, October. So by the fall, we will know whether that has made its way through the legislature.
And the goal would be for it to be implemented in the fall of 2021, then the fall school year of 2021?
This would be 2020.
Oh, okay. What I mean is in terms of actually starting the suspension, it wouldn't start until 2021, or it would start in the 2020 school year, fall 2020 school year.
It could conceivably start in the 2020 school year, depending on how the final legislation sets the date. So within, you know, within the next year or two, it will definitely have made its cycle.
And Dr. Darling-Hammond, before I let you go, I know that you were going to go through potentially this process of studying it. But at this point, I'm sure you've looked at it for some time, heard some of these concerns before this proposal was even made. Can I ask you, do you think the state fitness test is really a measure of fitness?
Well, you know, I think there are aspects of it that are probably useful measures of fitness. I've identified the areas that have been of great concern. You also identified the concerns about, for example, pull-ups and other things which do rise to the top in the complaints. But what we're going to be doing in this period of time is looking at other assessments that mm-hmm. exist around the country and asking ourselves whether we want to design our own that we think builds on the more current science and understanding about fitness and nutrition than what might have been the case, you know, decades ago.
So then fair to say that it's unlikely to be completely scrapped?
We will see what we will see about that. I can't really predict, but I can tell you that we will continue our encouragement of and support for physical fitness in multiple forms, including the recent adoption of our health education framework.
Linda Darling-Hammond, President of the State Board of Education, thanks for joining us this morning.
You are welcome.
And Lindsay Brewitt at UCSF, you've worked with children and young adults with eating disorders. Can you talk a little bit about what you see as a connection between the state physical fitness test and concerns that you've had with kids with eating disorders?
Absolutely. So at a systemic level, our community has long been concerned about this measure. We know that BMI is not an indicator of health. Overweight is not associated with more increased morbidity and mortality.
Right. Can you just remind us what the body mass index is and how it's measured in the schools?
Absolutely. So body mass index is a measure of one's height as compared to one's weight and compared with other individuals within gender groups.
And the reason that, for example, Governor Schwarzenegger would have failed is because muscle weighs a lot.
Exactly. And BMI is particularly problematic for children because it doesn't take into account differential muscle development throughout the lifespan. And so we know that using this measure is not getting us where we want to go. We know that BMI was never designed to be a health indicator. It was designed to look at large epidemiological studies. And furthermore, we know that subjecting young people to having their BMI measured in front of their peers, often well-meaning teachers may or PE teachers may call this number out in front of others. And so it subjects young people unnecessarily to increased body shaming, increased stigma around weight and size. And that's not something that we want to be giving our young people in schools.
What's the experience that they're sharing with you when, for example, their weight is being read out loud or they're being weighed in gym class in front of their peers? What's going through their minds? What's going on for them?
Yeah. An instance that really stands out to me is thinking about a young person that I treated for an eating disorder several years ago who had the experience of passing five measures of the fitness indicator and not passing the BMI indicator. And this individual's peers were given T-shirts if they passed all six indicators on the BMI or excuse me, on the fitness test. And this young person was not given a T-shirt because they didn't pass the BMI marker. We know that for this young person, their body needed to be in the overweight range. That was where their eating disorder was healthy. That was where their body needed to be according to their physician. And so it was really impossible for this young person to be both healthy and pass this indicator.
And so what do you think teachers should say who are administering these tests? Or if you could give recommendations for how to implement this test in its current form, because as of now it is required and in some cases teachers are about to do it, what recommendations would you make?
It should be done privately. These numbers should be measured privately without other students nearby. These numbers should be shared with students in a sensitive way that conveys the science behind BMI, which is that BMI is not an indicator of health and that we need to be really sensitive about what we're advising young people to do.
Can I get your reaction to Charlie's comment? Charlie writes, "Oh, please, I'm as sensitive as the next lib-left San Franciscoite, but this is insane. Have we lost all tether to reality?" He's not alone. There were, especially on social media, after this story came out, people saying another example of lowering the bar or trying to accommodate kids' sensitivities so they feel like everyone's a winner. I mean, there was some concern around that. What's your reaction to Charlie?
My reaction is that BMI is not an indicator of health. And so, yes, we need to promote physical fitness for our young people. That's important for general health, for general well-being. But that should be the goal, general health and well-being. The goal should not be exercise as a way to influence body shape and size.
Would you like to see physical fitness testing in schools? Do you think that's the right place to do it? Or do you think that this should be just scrapped?
Well, I think that any discussion about health should be had between a young person, their family, and their physician, and not in the school.
Not in the school. So you would like to see basically this eliminated from the school curriculum?
Yes.
Or a requirement?
Yes.
Nirav Pandya, how do you feel about that? You are a director of pediatric sports medicine and chief of pediatric orthopedic surgery. I mean, what do you think about the value of school fitness testing?
So I think when we think about it, we have to think of the kind of the 10,000-foot view. And I totally agree that we have to assess physical activity in a way that is both respecting of young children. So I think thinking about their BMI, having them disclose their gender identity are problematic. But I think we also still have to assess their physical activity. And what we're seeing now is a lot of kids who are engaging in physical activity in one of two different ways. They're either playing lots of specialized sports and learning how to build up skills rather than physical fitness, or they just don't have the option to play sports and they're not being active. So I think it's important for our schools to be able to promote physical fitness. And in order for us to do that, I think we have to assess it in a very kind and compassionate way. So I think it's important for us to find a balance where we can not shame people, do it in a private way, but still promote physical education and activity in a quantifiable way at our schools.
That's interesting. So you're saying that there's been this move to where children are either very highly specialized in a particular sport, or if they're not at that level, they're basically opting to not do sports at all. Is this kind of a cultural shift where we've kind of put more pressure on kids to do well, and if they're not doing well in an organized sport, we tend to say it's fine, you don't have to get involved? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're definitely seeing a shift now where, you know, kids at 6, 7, or 8 are basically defining their physical activity by how good they can kick a soccer ball, how good they can throw a baseball. And if there isn't an outlet for them, or they don't have the money to play these private sports, then there's really no outlet for them to play, to do physical activity outside of the school setting. So I think it's really important, because these kids are going to school every day, to have physical fitness there. And I think part of that is being able to quantify them in an appropriate way how they're doing. And I totally agree, this can be done in a private way. It doesn't have to involve BMI or having to disclose what your gender identity is. But I think if it can be individualized and kids can kind of see how they're doing and can have goals throughout the year in terms of improving their fitness, I hopefully then can continue to keep kids active and not get them injured and prevent problems down the road.
I see. I think I understand. I think you're saying that testing for physical fitness promotes often in schools the idea of physical fitness. Like, they'll talk about it and physical education programs will promote it, essentially, and that's a good thing. Like, it's kind of this middle ground so that you don't have to feel like you have to be the most amazing soccer player in the world, or your other option is, you know, just to kind of opt out.
Absolutely. I think it's the way we promote physical activity, that it should be something about a healthy lifestyle. And it's not about being the best athlete on the soccer team. It shows that physical fitness is about, you know, how good your cardiovascular system is, how strong you are. But we do have to agree. We do have to do it in a way that is respectful of kids and doesn't lead to larger issues, as the other speakers have talked of.
Yeah, I'd love to get to that more in a moment. But I want to bring Joel Baum into the conversation. Joel Baum is Senior Director for Professional Development at Gender Spectrum, which provides training and resources for schools nationwide. And Joel Baum, welcome to Forum.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yes, thanks for being with us. And, you know, we've heard a lot about the concerns that it is discriminatory towards gender nonconforming kids. Can you talk about the experience of kids who are on the gender spectrum who have taken this fitness test? What have you heard from them about what it's brought up for them?
Yeah, I mean, what we hear really when it comes to gender are two big issues. One is for our students who identify as non-binary, this whole notion of being held up against standards for boys and girls, which really more accurately should be described as standards for males and females. It can be very, very stigmatizing for them to either be categorized in a way that isn't consistent with their own experience, or to have to assert themselves in a way that can often lead to judgment and mistreatment by peers and or even by the adults. I'd say the second issue is for some of our transgender students who may be completely private with regards to their gender identity. That is, for all intents and purposes, they're known as the gender they're asserting, even though others might characterize them as transgender. And they are then also put in a position of either asserting their authentic identity in a way and revealing their sex in order to be judged against these standards, or to, again, not be as successful as they might be. And I think both of these really speak to the larger issue, and I think many of the speakers have talked about this. These tests, I think, in theory, and if you read the language about their purpose, are good. They're about promoting awareness, about really empowering young people to become more conscious of and in control of their physical health. And to that end, I think it's great. I think that the way they're being used, including the BMI issues, is where we're really running into problems. And we've reached a point, I think, where what we're getting from these is not worth what it's costing us, particularly because even in my own case, I have a seventh grader, and you know, very little attention is paid to her setting goals for herself and comparing her scores or her, you know, her mile time or whatever it might be to her own improvement versus this standard, which, quite frankly, she knows she's never going to meet. But nonetheless, she's in wonderful shape. And I do concur with the previous speaker. We need our kids exercising at school. We need them being given a message that physical activity is critical and self-awareness about health is critical. And one of the ways we do that is by determining these numbers. The problem is the way they're being used in a very public and often and sometimes even shaming way, such as the T-shirts that were described earlier.
Yeah, so it sounds like you don't necessarily feel that we should do away with it or that it shouldn't even be conducted in schools. What would you do to change the way that it's administered, especially in light of trying to be affirming for non-binary kids, for kids who are transgender?
Well, I really would return to a model of these being truly viewed as a summative assessment. That is, it gives us a sense of where someone is in a moment in time. And then from that, they can identify personal, private goals that they establish on their own, you know, that perhaps they keep in a PE journal or some way in which they can identify targets for them, regardless of their gender, regardless of their body size, that they're able to identify personal targets that they can move towards in improvement in any number of different areas. But again, the problem has been this very public process, including the testing itself. And that's where I would try to use this next 3 years, is to come up with a very, you know, nuanced and implementable. Because again, I was doing a training yesterday, and I had a PE teacher say she had like 60 students, and she's the only teacher, and how is she supposed to do this? And so, you know, part of this will be about becoming creative and how PE teachers can implement a program that allows kids to self-identify goals and track those goals, but to do it in a way that is about the students and not the high-stakes issues that Dr. Hammond spoke about.
Joel Baum is Senior Director for Professional Development at Gender Spectrum, which provides training and resources for schools nationwide. Thanks for talking with us, Joel.
Thank you so much, and have a great morning.
Thank you. You too. We're also talking with Dr. Nirav Pandya. He's a Director of Pediatric Sports Medicine and Chief of Pediatric Orthopedic Surgery at UCSF. And also with Dr. Lindsay Brewitt. She's a psychologist at UCSF who works with children and young adults with eating disorders. And with you, our listeners, should we be using physical fitness testing in schools? Would you like to see the test change to better accommodate all children, to scrap it altogether? Or what are your memories of taking the state physical fitness test? Call us at 866-733-6786 or post your comments on Facebook, Twitter, or email us at forum@kqed.org. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Governor Gavin Newsom is proposing a 3-year suspension of mandatory school fitness exams while the state studies whether it should modify the test or scrap it altogether. Newsom is responding to concerns that the tests can subject kids to bullying, body shaming, and gender identity discrimination. And we're talking with Lindsay Brewitt. She's a psychologist at UCSF who works with children and young adults with eating disorders, and Nirav Pandya, the Director of Pediatric Sports Medicine and Chief of Pediatric Orthopedic Surgery at UCSF. And with you, our listeners, we want to know how you feel about the state's physical fitness test. What are your memories of taking the test? Do you think we should be using fitness testing in schools? If you'd like to see the test changed, because you'd like to see us continue to do that, what changes would you suggest? Call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also post your comments on Facebook, Twitter, at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. And Scott writes, physical education classes are a source of bullying in general. As someone who has dyspraxia, PE classes were where my bullies discovered I was an easy mark. I think there needs to be more options for students to fulfill PE requirements, i.e. classes outside of school if the school cannot provide adaptive PE. Nirav Pandya, could you explain what dyspraxia is and this listener's thoughts about providing physical education in schools?
Yeah, I think that, you know, with any kids who maybe, you know, kind of not your traditional learner, when you're doing these traditional physical education classes, a lot of differences can definitely come out. So I do agree that the current environment of certain physical education programs where it is very open and very public can be difficult for a lot of students. So as one of the prior speakers said, I think we have to balance promoting physical activity, but do it in a way that each individual feels comfortable and then feels motivated to improve their physical fitness. So I think it does take us all to take a step back and say, how can we do this? We have the good 5 to 10 year goal in mind of keeping these young children healthy and active and doing it in a way that each individual student can achieve those goals.
Well, Lindsay Brewitt, Linda Darling-Hammond mentioned something that I was struck by when she said that it could that she was concerned about suicidality among children. And have you seen a link to, you know, these kinds of fitness requirements and this kind of, you know, public physical fitness testing to anxiety, depression, or even suicide?
I don't know that those exact links have been studied. What we do know is that any increase of things like body shame, stigma, asking folks who are non-gender binary to put themselves in a box that they don't see themselves in, that's going to increase things like anxiety, depression, suicidality, eating disorders, which is extremely concerning for our youth.
Well, let me go to Rob in San Francisco. Hi, Rob. Join us.
Thank you. First of all, my wife teaches kindergarten through second grade PE, and she really tries to make it fun. That's the main thing, is to get kids out moving their bodies in a way that they enjoy, because that will stick with them for a lifetime. There'll be a lifetime of, you know, exercise, hopefully, as part of their adult lives. But when I remember from the testing when I was a kid, when I was in junior high school at the beginning, I was terrible. And all my friends were better than me, and I felt bad, but I kind of used it as a motivator to get better. And by the time I was in the ninth grade, I had improved quite a bit, and there was a lot of satisfaction in seeing my improvement. And the main thing, I think, is to not test kids and judge them based on a set number of criteria that you have to do the quarter mile in this many seconds, or you have to be able to climb to the top of the gym on a rope, or any of these things. Is they test you at the beginning, and then they test you at the end of the year and see if you've improved. And the grade should be based only on, you know, your level of improvement. So, you know, you don't have to pass a standard. You have to just show that you're trying your best, that, you know, hopefully you're getting better. And maybe that'll take some of the shaming out of it, because I can see where if you don't live up to the standard that they set, then that might be, you know, make you feel dejected about it.
Rob, thanks. Lindsay Brewitt, Rob isn't the first person to weigh in and say that they did find this test motivating or a good benchmark, and that seeing progress, you know, was something that was inspiring in terms of healthier, more physically active lives. And so what's your response to Rob?
It makes perfect sense. And what many are describing is that having personal goals is really important and is an important way that we grow as humans. However, having standards that are trying to be applicable to a whole set of people who may have different strengths and weaknesses is not appropriate. Just as in schools, we know that children learn in different ways. We need to be sensitive to that and physical fitness needs as well.
Nirav Pandya, what do you feel like we lose by not having the assessment? I mean, you heard Linda Darling-Hammond say that the information from it isn't really used by the state at all. I mean, it's not like if you see a school with high levels of kids not passing this test that they try to do an intervention or I don't know, whatever other strategies that could help these kids reach the required levels.
I think what we're losing is that ability to quantify physical fitness. And I totally agree. Physical fitness has to be fun. It has to be done in a way that respects these differences. But I do appreciate the numbers. And I think that with physical fitness, if you're able to assess these kids, give them something quantifiable, and then track it, I think it then does, number one, motivates people, but also lets kids know individually, you know, am I getting better with the mile run? Is my flexibility improving? Am I getting stronger? Because I think it's really hard to be able to assess if someone's getting more physically fit unless you actually have the numbers, and you really have to use those numbers against yourself. And I agree, kind of using those numbers against an arbitrary scale isn't very useful. Rather, it's for internal motivation, just like we do as an adults. How much are we running? How fast are we running? Am I improving? And it gives you that hard data that's really important in assessing how good physical fitness is going.
That makes sense.
Lindsay Brewitt.
And I would add that I want to see data on this. So I want to understand if we are measuring these numbers and we're perhaps figuring out a way that we can individualize this to our students, how can we show that this is increasing physical fitness amongst our young people? Because right now, the data that we have about the way that this information is currently collected in schools shows us that it increases risk. So a survey that was done in 2012 demonstrated that 30% of young people who had had their BMI measured in schools demonstrated, according to parent report, increased eating disorder behaviors or behaviors that were concerning for the development of an eating disorder. So we're seeing that there's risk associated with these tests. And I want to see that if we are putting a new test in place, that it's going to be helpful for our young people and not harmful.
I mean, it kind of goes back to my earlier question, Nirav Pandya, to Dr. Linda Darling-Hammond, which is, you know, is this test really a test of fitness? And how would you define a fit kid when, as we are talking about, kids come in all shapes and sizes and gender identities?
No, I totally agree with that. And that's where I think it comes into the individualized aspect of things, is that.
But that sounds like potentially a lot for a school to do, right? I mean, potentially. I don't know. Maybe there are streamlined ways to do that, but.
No, I agree. I think that it's something that would be potentially a lot of work. And I think if we really have each child measure themselves against themselves to see some degrees in improvement, and I do agree that we do need more data to kind of look at what would we call, you know, what would be improvement, what would that be? So
yes,
there definitely is a means through which we have to study this a little bit further. But I do agree that we do need more data, and that with that data, we can then determine what is a physically active kid. But I do agree there's a lot of kind of nuances in terms of how we measure that, and we need to look at this over the next couple of years.
Well, let me go to Chris in Davis. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
I was just calling because for my child, she had fallen off her growth curve, and we had been going to see a nutritionist, and she became like very over obsessed with her weight and weighing herself like all the time, multiple times a day. And so, I mean, we had to put in place where, you know, she could only measure herself once a week. The school didn't even inform us that they were even going to be weighing the kids in school, nothing. And we had gotten her to where we felt like, okay, she had calmed down. All of a sudden, it amped herself back up where she started weighing herself constantly again. And we had to try and figure out what went on. And so there is really no informed consent. And then when I went to complain to the school about it, because, you know, it was a health issue. It was being dealt with through our health provider. I didn't imagine that a kid was going to get weighed in school. They were like, well, there's no way you can even opt out of it, which I think is wrong. I think that, you know, we can opt out of other tests. Why can't we opt out of this BMI if it's going to be detrimental to our kids?
You know, Chris, what's also interesting about what you're saying is that your daughter developed these concerns also just from being with her own physician, and I think you said falling off the growth curve. So do you think there are also problems with the way that her physician may have handled the situation?
No, I mean, her physician was, you know,
was
on
great
it
about
where
it.
She was like, okay, you know, because she had gained 3 pounds in 3 years, and she said, okay, there's a problem here, you know. So, I mean, I have no problem at all with what her physician did, and we handled it because she said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We need to make sure we're monitoring, we're seeing what's going on. But, you know, so it was like her in her own mind, my daughter's mind, like she became, because she knew she had to be gaining weight, and so she was trying to, you know, she was checking herself every day. Am I gaining weight? Am I gaining weight? And there was this thing where, you know, everybody fluctuates every day. And she, at her age, she couldn't understand that. Mm. And these, you know, she would fluctuate like, what, you know, a couple tenths of a pound or something. You know what I mean? Like on our scale at home. And, you know, so she became obsessed, like where she would measure herself in the morning and at night. And, you know, after she came home from school and stuff like that. And it's just, you know, it was her personality or whatever that we then had to, like, deal with, too. But, you know, we had got her to where then she stopped doing that, and we were on a good track. It had been like 6 months, you know, where she would weigh herself only once a week, and we were good. And then this happened at school, and we didn't know about it, and she wasn't secure enough in herself to tell her teacher, I don't want to do this, you know. But then it manifested herself because she started weighing, because then she compared herself to other students in class.
Yeah, so it sounds like a lot of things happened in that case, including the fact that you felt like the school should have informed you, or that there should have been some kind of consent process or an opportunity to share your daughter's situation with the school. Lindsay Brewitt, I see you nodding over there listening to Chris's story.
Yeah, I think Chris's story is a common one that we hear, which is that for many young people, having their weight measured in school is something that presents all kinds of problems. So it sounds like for this young person, that really increased a behavior that their family was and physician was working really hard to quell and to help her with.
Well, thank you, Chris. Anne writes, we have an obesity epidemic. We should be alarmed, and school fitness testing should be done in a sensitive way that doesn't shame, but it should still be done. Michael tweets, the lack of fitness is a serious problem. In the 20 years I've lived here, kids no longer even walk to school, and their free time is used up with staring at screens. Make fitness tests private, but don't get rid of them. Also, BMI is not an issue. How about the rise of type 2 diabetes among children? Nirav Pandya, a couple of things here. One is, could you explain to Michael how you feel about BMI? I'd be curious to know if you feel like it's an important marker, especially with regard to any link to diabetes and understanding your BMI numbers. And then also, I'd be curious if where we are in terms of this notion of an obesity epidemic among kids.
Yeah, so in terms of BMI, I think BMI is one component of a comprehensive assessment that you make of a child. And if you look strictly at BMI, it doesn't necessarily correlate with levels of physical fitness. I think at extremes of BMI, you get concerned, but it's just one piece of one data point when you're looking at someone's overall health. So I think just using BMI as a marker of someone's fitness is problematic. You know, I think overall in terms of the obesity epidemic, we are seeing more and more kids who are not as active. And we need to think of a society as how we can improve physical fitness and how we can make sure that kids are assessing themselves. So, you know, physical education tests alone aren't going to do it. I 100% agree with that. But we do need to have an avenue through which our institutions where kids are going every day to learn can also promote this physical activity. If not, then 20, 30, 40 years down the road, we're going to have lots of individuals who are dealing with diabetes, who are dealing with cardiovascular disease, which is going to be a tremendous burden both for our health system and for these individuals themselves. So we have to take a step back and say, okay, how are we going to keep our communities active, but also do it in a way that each individual child and family feels comfortable in doing so?
And where would you say we are with this notion of an obesity epidemic among kids, especially in light of the fact that I also feel like there's a big movement to accept and love the body that you're in?
Absolutely. And I don't see obesity as a physical appearance or, you know, kind of as something that's from an external viewpoint or something that's measured by a BMI. I think it's more about how you're doing in terms of how your physical health manifests. So it's not necessarily how you physically look. It's how you're physically feeling inside and how you're doing in terms of your health. So I 100% agree that this is more about not how you look, which is why I feel tests like the BMI or having to, you know, address issues about how you look. It's more about how you're physically fit. And there could be a kid who looks very fit, has a very low BMI, could actually perform very poorly on these tests. And someone who traditionally may, you know, be a little bit larger or have a different body image who will do great on these tests. So I think it takes us also at the school level to let individuals know that it's physical fitness is not about how you look. It's about how you feel internally and how you're performing in terms of your cardiovascular fitness and your strength. Fitness can look very differently amongst very different kids, and it's not about the outward appearance. It's how they're internally feeling and doing.
Well, this listener tweets, my daughter's public middle school here in San Francisco was using the physical fitness test for their PE grade. This is just plain wrong. Kids were getting B's and C's in PE class just because their mile time was slow. You know, one of the things that keeps coming up, Nirav Pandya, is how they're administered, that they're not administered in a uniform way or necessarily with the training and knowledge that's needed to make sure that you're not creating these down-the-line issues that Lindsay Brewitt deals with.
No, I 100% agree, and I think the spirit of the test is still good, but I agree the implementation of it does need to be worked around. So you need individuals who are administering it in a way that understand the data that you get from it. And as one of the prior speakers mentioned as well, too, we have to make sure that the data that we're getting or the way we're assessing it actually does lead to physical fitness. And it's also how the information is given to parents and their families as well, too. It needs to be a private thing. There needs to be recommendations as to how you can deal with it or how you can improve your fitness. So if you're doing poorly on the mile, these are things that you can do at home or things that you can work on to help improve that. So I think it has to not simply just be a marker that's used for shaming or for grading, but really is something that can give kids information and families about how they can improve their physical fitness or reinforce good habits at home.
So then if you had the opportunity, Dr. Pandya, to create this test, you know, as you're going through this process, what would you measure?
So I think I would measure kind of the components that we kind of see as physicians of good fitness. So number one, it would be cardiovascular fitness, your endurance. It would test your flexibility. It would test your strength. It would test your ability to do kind of short, explosive activities. So I think we would monitor to basically do these tests, do it in a way that's private, where other students or other families aren't getting this information. And that could be something that can be monitored at home. So does that necessarily mean that these tests have to be done at school? If a child has an issue or there are other things that may preclude them from doing it at school, allowing them to have their physical fitness assessed in other settings, whether it be at a YMCA, whether it be at a local park. But I think it's important for families to be able to assess it, but not necessarily in this traditional, okay, it's November 1st, everyone go out and run the mile and we're going to time you, or everyone does pull-ups in front of everyone else. I think we need to capture the data, but do it in a respectful way.
So it sounds like the actual components would still be what you're measuring in terms of endurance, like a timed mile, strength, you know, flexibility, and so on. You would probably maintain those components, but you would just measure them or administer it differently.
Correct.
And so, Lindsay Brewitt, would that be enough for you to keep it in schools?
Those recommendations make a lot of sense. And I think we really need to plan and think carefully about whether schools have the capacity to do this in a sensitive way. So my understanding is that in schools, the people responsible for delivering and administering these tests are teachers, are sometimes parent volunteers, letters are going home to parents, and we don't know how these individuals are presenting this information, whether they have the expertise to be able to speak about these issues in a sensitive way. And there's a lot of risk that can be associated with not presenting these issues in a sensitive way, such as anxiety, depression, suicidality, eating disorder.
Let me go to Valerie in Oakland. Hi, Valerie. Hi, Valerie. Are you there?
Hi. Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead.
Okay, perfect. Thank you for having me. So I just wanted to mention my experience in middle school. I was dealing with an eating disorder, and I did have my weight announced in front of the class, which only exacerbated those behaviors. I think it's really important to consider, like, ethnic backgrounds. I am Mexican-American, so my body build is very different. So just with that being said, I'm wondering how technology can be applied to create some type of app where these numbers can be uploaded in a private manner that parents and students can access. I mean, most kids have phones these days, so I think it's very easily accessible. I also do recognize, though, that this can cause an issue for schools from lower-income communities and, you know, that may not have the resource available. But with that, all of that being said, I'm just wondering how technology can be used to benefit us in using a more sensitive approach to make this information private.
Lindsay Brewitt, your thoughts on technology and whether that's an answer or a potential solution?
That's a really interesting idea. I think that it brings up two potential problematic issues for me. One is that for some folks that may be more prone to obsessing over numbers or being really fixated on their weight or their shape, I think that we've seen that technology can increase that. The other is that even really well-meaning families, most families want the best for their children, and even really well-meaning families can inadvertently send messages about weight and shape that are not helpful for child development.
You're listening to Forum. We're talking with Lindsay Brewitt, psychologist at UCSF, and Nirav Pandya, director of pediatric sports medicine and chief of pediatric orthopedic surgery at UCSF. We're talking about Governor Gavin Newsom's proposal to suspend the mandatory school fitness exam for 3 years while they study it. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Mina Kim. And we're getting a lot of comments about how fitness and physical education is tied to grades. Lisa writes, I'm a parent who's been complaining about these PE standards for years. Both of my boys are straight A 4.0 students, but it's almost impossible for them to get an A in PE because they're not runners. They're healthy and in good shape, but if you can't do the timed mile, you can hardly get an A, which is frustrating. Nir Pandya, what do you think about the way physical education is done and the fact that you get a grade in PE?
Yeah, I agree that that's problematic. I don't think that there's a way that kids should be getting a grade because, you know, what constitutes an A can vary from child to child, from school to school, from region to region. So I think physical education should really be an activity that's ungraded because then it becomes something in these children's eyes that it's something that is punishable, that it's you know, it's almost like consequential if you don't do well in it. So I think physical education should be a class that's not graded. You get feedback, you get, you know, standards for what how you do, but it shouldn't be graded because I think that's problematic. Physical fitness, people are fit in different ways, and to then basically create an arbitrary standard from school to school of what is fit that's graded by the teachers is somewhat problematic. So I think we really need to say this is more about kids getting these tests, getting numbers back to them, and then utilizing that in a way that, you know, can help promote fitness rather than arbitrarily assigning a grade of A, B, C, or D to their achievement.
And Susan, I believe, is touching on something you brought up earlier. Susan writes, if kids are shamed in PE class, they grow up to be adults who think sports are for athletes, not everyone. PE shouldn't be about who can run the fastest or who can do more push-ups. There are extracurricular sports for that. For every student, general knowledge about the importance of exercise is much more important. It sounds like she's echoing what you're saying. I'm just curious, Dr. Pandya, if you are, as an orthopedic surgeon, seeing an increase in injuries among kids who do more specialized sports, just out of curiosity.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm definitely seeing a tremendous increase. I mean, a 50 to 75% increase in these traumatic adult-type injuries in kids who are as young as 8, 9, or 10. And I think what's happening is that we basically are seeing physical fitness not just as a means to be healthy, but as a means to get a scholarship, as a means to be really good at the skill. And unfortunately, what happens is these kids are getting injuries because of that. And I think schools are one place where we can redefine what physical fitness is. It's not about sports. It's not about achieving a quantifiable skill. It's about staying healthy and active. And unfortunately, our culture has changed, where we're identifying someone being fit, not necessarily as being healthy and running well and being flexible and strong, but rather the best person who can throw a ball or kick a soccer ball on the goal. And we need to reshape that. I think schools are one place where we can do that.
Well, let me bring Harlene into the conversation. Harlene in San Jose. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, you are.
Great. What's your thought?
So I kind of was wondering if we're looking at the problem a little too narrowly. Like, I understand, like, we always implement tests, we get rid of tests, like, there's these conversations about that. But I'm wondering, looking at the problem more holistically, like, physical education, I believe, is one piece of the puzzle. But what about, you know, your food, what you eat in school? Like, that also is a huge contributor to how you can perform in, like, physical activity. And it's a big, you know, with obesity and everything, like, food education, mental health, like, and also just making physical education more fun, like by implementing tests or, you know, comparing oneself to others, doesn't it feel like, shouldn't we focus more on like, how do we just promote it in a fun way, make kids want to exercise and be interested in what they personally would want to do, like yoga or whatever it is, and also include educating on health as well, just food, what you eat.
Well, Harlene, thanks. Lindsay Brute, you wanted to follow up to what Harlene's comment was.
I totally agree. We should be taking a holistic approach. We know that physical activity can be beneficial for things like anxiety, depression. For those who've recovered from eating disorders, physical activity can be a healthy part of recovery. And focusing on physical activity as something that's good for general health as well as good for well-being is the right way to think about it.
Well, Julie writes, back in the 1980s, I remembered being tested on pull-ups, something we never did in class, so none of us passed. There was no stigma because none of us could pass the test. But that said, that implicates the actual standard, it sounds like, to some degree. Lindsay Brewitt. Let me see if I can bring one last person in, Gabe in San Jose. What's your comment, Gabe?
Yeah, I've got a few comments, and I'll try to get through them fast. First, I totally want to echo what everyone else says. The BMI is a terrible test metric, should not be used for measuring somebody's health at all, because it's totally arbitrary at this point. Also, body weight exercises are gender neutral, so therefore gender standards really don't apply. My wife can actually do more push-ups and pull-ups than I can simply because she's worked on them for quite a while, and when we met, she couldn't do any. So I think that's something that should be encouraged for women or transgender students, and just say, just because you're a woman or you identify as a woman doesn't mean you have a different metric. Fitness is fitness. Also, I think that our measurements should not be generic numbers that we're just assigning. It should be based on progress. That means we should have testing throughout the year, not just at one point. And our PE classes should be focusing on what is going to be tested. That means we should be working on proper form, and that the education of proper form and body mechanics for the push-ups, the pull-ups, squatting, flexibility, and obviously running. And last, I wanted to point out that there was a high school education program in Carmichael, California, at La Sierra High School. That was an excellent paradigm for what we should be shifting to today. Maybe it was a little bit more militant than what we could get away with today, but still the general principle was proper body mechanics, body weight exercises, and also measuring progress, not measuring exact numbers. Mm. And, you know, after a certain level, obviously, if somebody can do 20 pull-ups, you know, you don't look at progress beyond that because they're already in pretty good shape. But somebody that can go from zero to one pull-up should absolutely be celebrated because that is a massive milestone, and that should be the encouragement we should be looking at.
Well, Gabe, thanks. I think you've summed up quite a few of the points and recommendations. Fair to say, Lindsay Brewitt and Nirav Pandya, that the state has a lot of work to do and that a lot of our listeners would support the studying of the physical fitness exam. Lindsay Brewitt, psychologist at UCSF, who works with kids and young adults with eating disorders. Really appreciate having your insights today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And also Nirav Pandya, director of pediatric sports medicine and chief of pediatric orthopedic surgery at UCSF. Thanks as well for your thoughts.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to our listeners for their questions and stories and comments. We'll have another hour forum. Tell us how you get engaged locally. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.